Okay, so now we're in recording. And as I said, you can push star 6 to unmute yourself if you have a question. But I'm going to start off this morning. Thank you all for coming. I know there are many things you could be doing on a Sunday morning, so I'm happy that you decided to join me this morning. The name of this talk is The Personal Ego Betwixt and Between. It's a funny little title, but it'll make more sense as we go into the lecture and we go ahead. So I'm going to start with a meditation. Just sit quietly and breathe for a few minutes. Let yourself settle in. Maybe you were running around this morning. Just settle in to the space. Now say to yourself, there is no life but this one. There are not two lives, one where I am dealing with suffering and I feel separate from others, and one where I am enlightened and awake and there are no challenges or difficulties. Yes, life is sometimes confusing, and there are times I feel happy and in the flow of life, and there are times I feel sad and disconnected from life. However, right here and now, I am willing to be with my life as it is. I am willing to be located in one place to enter into this dynamic present moment. This does not mean that things will remain the same, since life is continually changing and transforming. What it does mean is that I stop in this moment questing after a fantasy life. Right now, I am willing to receive and accept my life exactly as it is, with all of its imperfections. As you allow yourself to do this, even if only a little, you enter into the place where life as a whole helps us to change what we need to change and simultaneously be in life as it is. Reality takes us where we need to go. This dance of change and acceptance, which is ongoing, takes place here and now in the present moment. So just breathe and allow yourself to be here. So I thought I'd go ahead with the lecture. If someone needs to say anything before I get started, you can push star 6 to unmute yourself. Okay. So I will weave some of the insights of this meditation into our talk. But for now, let me start with something that probably is like the little blurb you received about this workshop. The ego, or the personal self, has two important and distinct jobs. The ego's first job is to develop, shape, form, express, and maintain the integrity of the individual, the personal self, a unique you or me. That's our first job. The second job of the ego, which is simultaneously happening with the first one, is to seek out the greater whole, which includes us as just one aspect, along with all other beings and the transcendent impersonal. Both of these jobs are vital to being an authentic human being, living an authentic human life, one life. We have the job of being a personal being and the job of seeking and coming into relationship with all of life. On a fundamental level, these two jobs are not in conflict or opposition. They're in fact two aspects or two sides of a single thing. They're a unity. This is not clear to us, however, as we grow and develop and move through our lives. They often feel very much in conflict, and they often feel quite confusing. So let's start at the beginning of the personal self, known as a Tim or a Mark or an Alice or an Elizabeth, at least from the perspective of coming into form. Birth happens, and here we are, a baby, in a tiny little baby physical form. Our first awareness of our individual self is associated with this body, one that poops and eats and tries to take everything into his or her mouth and cries and has many different sensations running throughout the body. Some that are comfortable and feel good, and others that are quite uncomfortable and don't feel so good. This is the beginning of the development of our individual self, this orientation to having a physical form that also has contact with other physical forms, from our caretakers to other family members, neighbors, other people curious about the new baby. And these can feel good or not. It can can be too loud, too much for our little systems. And then we have contact with all kinds of other shapes and forms, from bottle to breast, blankets and diapers, little onesies that hold us perhaps sometimes a little too tight when our feet are trying to kick around. We orient ourselves with textures. We feel the softness and the smoothness and the rough textures. We might have a mobile above our crib, and we're aware of it moving and the shapes, and it kind of fascinates us, and we follow it. We experience light and darkness, hunger and wet and messy diapers. We feel this great pull to pay attention to this little body, the digits and the fingers and the toes, and we try to, again, put them all into our mouth. And we want to take them in. We have toys and objects around us, and we play with how it feels to lift them and move them and rattles and sounds. The beginning of our seeking out the larger whole at this time is primarily centered upon our caretakers, whether this be mom and dad or a single parent or grandparents, or maybe even an older sibling is involved, or nannies or babysitters, or maybe we're born and find ourselves in a strange place like an orphanage and we have many different caretakers. All of these have an effect on us and our sense of being an individual person, individual being in this little body, which is, again, very oriented to the body at that point, and we're in contact with this greater whole in the form of other beings. We can't feed or dress or change our own diapers. We're counting on them. This larger whole, all these other people, filled up with people at that point, big bodies, to hold us and care for us and feed us and change our diapers and adjust the temperature when needed and dress us and so on. Maybe some of them are rough and don't hold us carefully. Others hold us far apart from their bodies and we feel like we're going to fall. Some little snuggle in close to their hearts. Others come in angry or depressed. It's all quite confusing. We have this imperative, this impulse, to be an individual form, which is primary centered, as I said, again, at this point on the body, and we know we need the greater whole to take care of us, to help us. And it's filled with inconsistencies. Sometimes it feels good, and sometimes not so good. Since babies sleep a lot, we can also extrapolate that there's a connection to the greater impersonal whole as well, that perhaps during the dream state, it's not just our parents. But at the same time, our imperative at that point in terms of developing the individual beingness is to orient ourselves to the body, to pay attention to the body and to the caretakers who are there for us. We become aware of the emotions of the caretakers. Sometimes they're happy to see us and smiling, and other times they are cranky or angry. We slowly, or sometimes not so slowly, awaken out of the fuzzy oneness we're in, usually with our caretakers, and begin to realize that we're a separate being, which brings up questions of how do I get my needs met in relationship with myself and others when they are inconsistent and not always present with me and are busy with other things. Of course, we're not thinking that at that point, but we are feeling this as a sensation in the body. We often feel it as anxiety when babies are cranky and fussy for what appears to be no reason, but absolutely probably has great reason to it, but of hunger that may go on too long, of confusion and discomfort, reactions to too much. Depending on the overall availability of the caretakers, their anxieties, or the bond with the child, we can feel overall cared for and taken care of, and that we can rest in this greater wholeness, that we can rest. This is important, that we can rest in this greater wholeness at that point known as our caretakers and continue our journey of individual development. Or, even at that point, hypervigilance and anxiety can begin to take up a lot of space in the developing human being. in the body. It's usually a mixture of both, but depending on how the failures of the system to take care of the baby, then there's a lot of anxiety that can appear. Wondering, will someone show up and feed me? Will they hold me like I need them to hold me? In other words, am I safe? Will I be okay? Will my needs be met by this larger container? Is there what was called by Winnicott a good enough relationship between the developing human being and the greater whole? Do we feel a sense of relationship or harmony in some way between these two, between the individual developing being and the greater whole? Or do they feel in some fundamental sense at odds or in conflict with each other? Again, this is more of a felt sense in the body and emotional reactions to the sensations in the body at this point. Not so much these thoughts of, will I be safe, will I be okay, but nonetheless, they're there. These tensions, these impressions and pressures in the body. It matters a great deal in terms of our ability to begin to feel that there is a relationship between who I am and the outside world, between who I am and a greater whole. Is there some kind of contact and relationship, and is there caring and movement in both directions? Or do I feel more isolated, alone, and separate? All of this continues, of course, throughout our childhood with siblings and peers in school and other family members. We work with trying to find our place with other physical bodies. Judgments arise about, are we as attractive as others? Am I good enough? Do I get enough attention? Am I seen without being judged? How am I judged? Am I judged based on color or appearance of our hair or body? Am I judged based on the fact that I'm a good athlete or I'm a poor athlete? Am I judged based on the fact that I can write and read easily, or that I have difficulties writing and reading? Are our differences appreciated? Are we taller or shorter than everyone else and feel odd because of it? And then we have the emotional demands. What kinds of emotional demands are placed on us to take care of our parents' needs by being a good little boy or a good little girl, a big man or a big girl? Are we expected to know how to do things before we actually learn them? Are we expected to get it right, and if we get it wrong, are we criticized? Are we yelled at when we play with our favorite toy and we break it? Are we encouraged to share or demanded to share? Is our privacy and need to own things honored, right along with the need to share and come in contact with others? Are we expected to be happy all the time and never be sad? What type of reactions do we get when we fail at something or when we succeed? What type of activities are we expected to engage in, such as sports or music? Do we like those activities? And are our likes and dislikes accounted for and listened to? Or do our parents expect us to do them regardless? Because they say so. Do we have friends that we feel safe with? That we can laugh and share, tell our secrets? Are we left alone a lot? Reading in our stories, playing with our toys, sitting in our room. How is anger and aggression held in the family system? How is it held in the school system, or the church, or the synagogue, or if we don't have any, either one of those, how is it held in all kinds of institutions that we may be part of, if we go to a daycare center? How is it held? All of these have an effect on the two jobs of the ego. They can increase our hypervigilance, our need to watch out for ourselves, to be on guard, to protect our individual personhood from continual judgments and invasions from the others, being hurt or humiliated or shamed. We can experience severe traumas of being hurt, or we can also experience just the day-to-day consistent, it doesn't feel good here. It can increase our sense that the greater whole is somehow not trustworthy, that it's going to fail us in some vital, important ways. The greater whole doesn't really care about me personally. The greater whole is just going about its business, and I'm going about mine, and I'm trying to survive. It can increase, obviously, as I said, the split between these two jobs of the ego. And they begin to grow and become at odds with each other. This seeking out of the greater whole and the ability to take care of the individual human. This is important for the ways we trust and do not trust ourselves. Do not trust our individual uniqueness, the ways we're made, the things we care about. Or we do not trust the greater whole, other human beings, or the larger infinite. Children have a feeling of a larger whole, whether they talk to other beings, whether they are aware of just, maybe they, if you've gone involved, you might be aware of God or maybe aware of different things, but you can begin to feel betrayed by the greater whole, both the form in terms of other people and the formless. These things begin to coalesce into ideas and thoughts and feelings that become solid or locked in memory in our bodies and our minds and our emotions. We start to hide parts of ourselves from others in order to protect ourselves. And we also start to hide parts of ourselves from ourselves, things we don't like, such as our vulnerability or our weakness. We don't even notice that we are locking these in as the rules of the game, the rules for how life is for or against me, how and where and I can be myself, and how and where I cannot be myself, what is possible and not possible in relationship to myself and others. So I'm going to pause before I go to the next place and just see how you're taking this in today. I'm going to hit... Well, you can push *6 and see if you'd like to make a comment or share anything or ask a question about what I've said so far.
Brenda?
Yes?
This is Inez.
Yes?
This is very powerful for me. It's like awakening, waking up, like, oh, wow. So you took me to lots of different places.
Good. Good. I know that can be uncomfortable, but good. I'm happy to hear that. So let me say a little bit more, and then I'll open it up again. So we're just trying to sort out how things are, what's real and not real, so we continue to grow up. And so we can maintain and take care of the integrity of our individual self and be in the greater whole to survive, really. There's another thing that kicks in as the child develops that I think is important to note here. This is the creativity of the individual personality. This often shows up from imaginary friends, to playing creatively, making up new games, telling stories, imagining what life will be like when we grow up. It's one of the great gifts of childhood and the developing human being, and also lends itself naturally to feeling the greater whole, the bigger world in which we are part of as we imagine ourselves to be doctors or teachers or astronauts, play with cars and baby dolls. What is also true is that this magnificent ability is used by us to create fantasies that we hope will save us. Fantasies that we hope will save us, this is important, from the slings and arrows of our childhood to fill in the gaps between where we are now and where we want to be, to ease the pain and confusion that we cannot bear. We fantasize and make up stories where we are big enough, smart enough, strong enough, powerful enough, perfect enough, beautiful enough. Maybe perfect and idealized as we look at various models or TV shows or cartoons or comic books, images and ideas that feel big and strong and powerful, as opposed to the way we feel, often, which is vulnerable, tiny, confused, lost, uncertain, not knowing what to do. Here's the key. The fantasies that we make up always include ways that we are more than where we are. Things like we're unassailable, we're indestructible, we're invincible, and cannot be hurt, and are not vulnerable, weak, or confused. These fantasies are a miracle. Truly they are, in and of themselves, because they save our lives, meaning they help maintain the integrity of the developing ego personality. They fill in the gaps and confusions and ease the pains of our childhood. It's really quite remarkable, the creativity of a child, that we are able to do that. That we are able to create these stories that will save us. Young children can also spend time talking to angels, or those who've passed on, sometimes grandparents and aunts and uncles that might have passed on. They can often do this as a way of feeling connected to the greater whole, but in a way that they can feel safe with, because usually those other beings aren't demanding anything of them, aren't controlling, aren't telling you that you're a good little boy or a bad little boy or how you have to be. So you get to feel safe, and it becomes part of your creative life to save your life. It's amazing, as I said, that we're able to do this. They also have a usually not noticed or unknown downside to them as they continue to play out. They have a splitting the work of individuation and being a part of greater whole into two lives, which is where I started the conversation today. One in which I feel tiny and helpless and imperfect, and I'm struggling and I'm in pain and I'm struggling to get seen and struggling to get my needs met. And another in which I am big enough, strong enough, large enough, invincible enough that I don't need others, and it were only going to hurt me anyway. What we're also not aware of is that these fantasies actually become frozen and locked in memory and continue to play out as adulthood, which I'll talk about in a minute. But right now, I'd like to say to you, I'd like to see if you feel safe enough, and if you don't, just to even try feeling it inside of yourself. See if you can remember some of the consistent fantasies that you had, whether that was of a superhero or the fantasy of, you know, one day I'm going to be bigger and they can't hurt me. I'm going to be smarter. I'm going to be wiser. I'm going to know how to do everything. No one can control me. I'll tell you that one of the consistent fantasies I had as a child was associated, as I was mentioning earlier, to do with angels and other beings, which I talked to a lot as a child. There's a lot of reasons why that was true. But a consistent fantasy that I had was that one day I would be wise enough to understand all of these humans like I thought angels did, and that humans would no longer be able to hurt me. I would be as peaceful and as loving as the angels, and untouchable by anyone being mean to me, hurt me, yell at me. It saved my life. It also became a problem later on. But that was a consistent fantasy of mine, that I would somehow reach the place where I would be wise enough, peaceful enough, compassionate enough, unassailable enough, that I would be just filled with love for all these crazy humans, but they wouldn't hurt me. So I'm going to open it up. Just take a moment, pause, feel for yourself, perhaps what some of your stories were, things you told yourself. It might have been just a moment where you said, one day I'll be big enough and I'll show them. See if you can feel. Take the risk, if you're willing, to say star six and name maybe one of your. It can be painful to feel these, but I do want to encourage you to name a few, if you can.
Brenda, this is Irma. Good morning.
Good morning.
I had this belief, and still sometimes it gets in the way, that if I was good, if I was always good, everything would be okay.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that was a biggie. And it you know, reverberates today at times.
Yeah.
But if I was good, nothing bad would happen, and everything would be okay, and nobody would die, and I would be safe.
Wow. Well, sweetie, just breaking my heart. I mean, I feel the pressure on your system to be good enough to control anything bad happening in the world. Wow. Mm.
Am I on?
Well, yes, but hold on 1 second. I want to stay with Irma for a second. If you could just hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Wow, Irma. pressure on your body, pressure on your heart to be that kind of good.
Wow. And I was. I was. There's no other choice.
I mean, that's just it. You, as a child, you acted out. I mean, and we it continues into adulthood, and you acted out, and it gets more and more solidified, and the more, because again, part of the magical thinking of the fantasy is it shows up. Okay, I'm good, and now my parents aren't yelling. Okay, I'm good, and now this isn't happening. Okay, cause and effect. That's why. Okay, got it. I'll keep it in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sweetie.
Thank you.
Florence, is that you?
Yeah, it was. I think I kind of had my fantasy built on the Cinderella story.
Mm-hmm.
That I had to work really hard and do everything I was supposed to do. And then somehow, magically, all of the people in my life would help me get to the ball. You know, my
uh-huh.
father would buy me my cars. My mother would make me my clothes. And that somehow I would go off with this prince and be rewarded for being good. And doing all of the chores that I needed to do, taking care of all of the people, taking care of the house that I needed to take care of. That was, I think, very strong for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
And the talk today is mirroring a lot of some work that I did a few days ago in a healing about how I squelch my own vibrancy and happiness, and I have to be really, really good. And that good definition is one that's been imposed from the outside, you know, of being helpful, taking care, but in the way that I was taught to take care of people, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not letting them be who they are, but taking over for them.
Yeah. Thank you, sweetie.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
This was such a strong, consistent fantasy as a child. I wanted to die because I believed if I died, I'd be able to go home to heaven.
Wow.
And then I would always be loved and always be safe, and nothing bad would ever happen to me again.
Oh, sweetie.
When I came to ASOS, that's when I found my real home. And I didn't have to hold on to that fantasy anymore.
Thank you, sweetie. So painful to hear that the only way you felt you could be safe was to die. Did you have a lot of illnesses as a child? Were you sick a lot?
No, I wasn't sick. I was, I was never sick as a child.
Interesting. Interesting. So you didn't have that
other than
in
the child, you know, chicken pox, measles.
So you didn't act it out in that way, but it's mm-hmm. but my guess would be that emotionally you had to deaden or cut off many different places inside of you because the fantasy was bound to be acted out in some way. So if it wasn't physically dying, then there was probably a lot of other dying and cutting off and pretending things didn't bother you. And
absolutely. And a lot of it was acted out by not having relationships, you know, not
uh-huh.
really being in relationship even in my own family.
Uh-huh.
It's not feeling like I had a place anywhere. Well, a few relationships where I felt safe and loved, but they were outside of my family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they always went away.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would be taken away.
Thank you, sweetie.
You're welcome.
So much for sharing her tender little heart.
This is Maris.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. This is who?
This is Maris. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, Maris, I can hear you. Uh-huh.
I guess my fantasy is was as a child that I was a failure and that was the cause of all the treatments I got.
Mm. Mm.
So it's like what Irma said, I had to be good, but I wasn't.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm. So your fantasy included that it was your fault for why things were happening, why they acted the way they acted to you, and that it was your fault because you weren't good enough and you weren't good. I hear you.
Mm.
Mm. Sweetie. Sweet little one, I hope you can feel compassion and kindness to the little one in you right now, who felt carried the weight of the world on her shoulders.
Yes, I can feel it.
Thank you, Metis.
Brenda, this is Sudha here.
Hey, Sudha.
I'm just a little bit wondering about where did I fantasize? One fantasy is I remember writing a note in a book and keeping, I want to leave and go to the mountains. My mom has seen that and she just shouted and yelled at me. I think I wrote it in that I want to die or something like that. I want to go away from this place. I want to die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then she yelled at me saying, what is wrong with you? We are getting mm-hmm. everything what you need here. So it was
mm-hmm.
really shaming me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this another place is always, I used to get so much anger with her about how she used to treat the rich people in a different way and the mm-hmm. poor people. So I used to feel, I'm going to show her, I'm going to become so rich with all the goals, whatever it is. But then when I look at now, that split is there. I've never become rich. I never fantasized I want to become rich. But it is just get back at her that I'm going to show you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That's a fantasy. There it is. The fantasy of being rich enough to show you. I mean, it's okay. There's always intelligence in our fantasies. You mean it's okay to want to be, to have money and to want to have a good life. But when it's done from the place of in opposition to yourself and to the other and to show them in some way, then it also has a lot of hurt and pain in there that's also being hidden.
Mm. But then the another split is like, I don't need you, I'm going to do everything what I need you. Is that also a fantasy?
Yes, darling, that's also a fantasy.
we go and do everything, even starting from 7 years, yeah. I started,
yeah,
like, nobody's going
that's
to know what
I want. That's also a fantasy. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Because, again, remember, the ego personality has two jobs, one of which is to be an individual person who can do things and who can make things happen, the other of which is to be connected to the greater whole, which includes other human beings, other beings, nature, life, and the impersonal, transcendent. So if you're cutting off other people because you don't trust them and you're wanting to get big enough, rich enough, strong enough, whatever the list is, so that you don't need mm-hmm. them, then you're cutting yourself up and you are creating a fantasy life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're splitting yourself into pieces. So this is good. I'm happy that you're just awakening to some of this right now. I feel such tenderness for the little Suda and such compassion. I mean, again, the miracle is we could do these, we could create these to save our lives. The struggle is that as adults, when we actually have different capabilities, we're not too and totally at the mercy of our parents. The difficulty is that as adults, we're still holding on to them, and we're still using them to save ourselves from feeling certain things. So just beginning to wake up to that is good, really good.
Thank you.
So thank you, sweetie.
Brenda, this is Calvin.
Hey, Calvin.
Hi. I was meandering through my life and realizing that, as you spoke, for me it was a fantasy of being truly independent
mm-hmm.
of others, and that I couldn't really count on them to prop up my life or make it what it needed to be, and that the task was to be really good at doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Getting everything done on my terms, in my way,
mm-hmm.
whether that be taking care of myself or taking care of others,
mm-hmm.
so that it all worked out, because
mm-hmm.
I just have myself to really depend on to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that created this difficulty in needing others,
right.
in acknowledging what I really needed and resting and trusting in that.
Right.
But I spent a lifetime learning to undo and learning how to be more vulnerable about what I really need. And so it was an important fantasy that I lived out for too long.
Well, it was an important fantasy. I mean, it obviously saved your life. Again, it obviously helped you maintain the integrity of your individual being. It gave you things it needed to give you at the time. But as you said, it got frozen and it got locked in place and you continued to act it out. The wonderful news is that you did begin to wake up to it, because that's the miracle. The other miracle is that the greater whole, I'm going to say the transcendent and personal as well as all of reality, is also designed to help us wake up in the middle of those fantasies and to see them, is always trying to bring us to other levels of wholeness. So when we think it's all up to us, which is a fantasy in and of itself, it turns out that's not true. There's a lot going on in reality that led you to being able to see that you need it. Sometimes it's through pain that we learn. It's often, a lot of times, because it's very difficult for us to give up our fantasies, because we're still convinced if we keep working at them, they're eventually going to give us the thing we're after. So sometimes it's through the pain of relationship and what happens in it that we begin to wake up and realize this just doesn't work. I'm not getting my needs. I can't be vulnerable with anyone else. I'm feeling more separate and more isolated and more cut off. So, beautiful, Calvin. I just feel such tenderness for the little Calvin and for you, the adult Calvin, who has done such incredible work and is continuing to wake up in the middle of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sweetie. So So I'm just going to go on, say a few more words. Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who was an English poet from 1772, lived from 1772 to 1834, he spoke of fantasy. In those days, it was called flights of fancy. Some of you may have heard that term. If you've read any, you know, Jane Austen and other stuff, you've probably seen it. But in those days, it was called flights of fancy. And he said, fancy is indeed no other than a mode of memory, emancipated from the order of time and space, against the language of the time, so it's a little, you know, while it is blended with and modified by the empirical phenomenon of the will, which we express by the word choice. It has no other counters to play with but fixities and definites. Even though it's the language of his time, he's saying pretty much the same thing that we've been talking about, that we choose, we make a choice to escape and save ourselves, which is a miracle in itself, in fantasy when we are little. And these fantasies then become stuck in memory, and we play them out in our everyday adult lives. We get stuck in the fantasies in very subtle ways and in also very major ways of constantly pitting the life we have with its challenges and imperfections and struggles against a fantasy life in which we don't have those, in which we're independent enough, good enough, we're enough, whatever the list is, so that no one hurts us. For some of us, and many in this group probably recognize this, this is a big part of what drew us into spiritual work in the first place. We wanted a place of peace and a place without our pain and sorrow. For others, and for, well, I'd say for all of us, the fantasies play out in times of relationships. People we date, people we marry, many of us can look at that. Jobs that we have, the perfect job we're expecting to get later. It has us constantly at odds with the life we're living right now. It can appear around life and death, as Cindy named. Here I am now, but when I die, then I will be at peace and know everything, and it will all be okay. These fantasies, which were a choice at one time, to use Coleridge's words, but it becomes a fixity or definite, as he named it, as the way the world is. We believe it to be true, either almost entirely or certainly, you know, 90%. We believe it a lot. Waking up to our fantasies, waking up to the ways we create two lives, in subtle ways and in big ways, and the ways we're maintaining a pseudo-relationship to the greater whole by cutting off parts of ourselves is counterintuitive. But what's also true is we're no longer little children who are completely powerless to change our environments or the situations we're in or to change our own minds and hearts. There may be enormous challenges to do that, but little changes, steps to wake up in the middle of the life we're living or possible. We want to claim the aspects of ourselves we left behind, whether this is our powerlessness, which actually returns us to our true power, claiming our confusions, which actually allows us to become more clear, claiming our vulnerability, which actually allows us to feel more strong and connected, opening up to our creativity, and using it in ways to help ourselves, to heal, to move forward more in relationship to ourselves and more in relationship to others, to heal the places where we've cut off and exiled. We can begin to use our creativity, and at this point I would call imagination instead of fantasy. Fantasy was designed to protect and defend only at a time when we couldn't do anything different. It has its value. It has its place. Imagination includes fantasy. It recognizes it in intelligence and its place. But imagination is also more than that. Albert Einstein said, imagination is more powerful than knowledge. For knowledge is limited to all we now know and understand, while imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and understand. I love that quote. I'm going to repeat it. Imagination is more powerful than knowledge. For knowledge is limited to all we now know and understand, which is where our fantasies were created. It was based on what we know and what we could understand at the time. That's why we needed them. It's all we were limited in what we could understand about ourselves and the world. So, but they were limited. But imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and understand. Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who I was quoting earlier, also said, imagination I hold to be the living power and prime agent of all human perception. And as a repetition in the finite mind of the eternal act of creation in the infinite I am. Again, very powerful. Imagination I hold to be the living power and prime agent of all human perception. And as a repetition in the finite mind, individual minds, of the eternal act of creation in the infinite I am. He basically goes on to say that it is imagination that allows for and brings forward this unity of, again, what I would say, the two jobs we have of being at once an individual person and one who's connected to all of life. That's the unity, which is imagination. Reuniting the individual integrity with the greater whole. When we believe ourselves to be separate and cut off only, limited only, in a way that we cannot understand and we're reduced to fantasies, doesn't mean that we're not still limited, but limitation is included in imagination. Imagination embraces the fact that this is what I can do today and can also imagine a greater whole. The difference between the two is fantasies always consistently exclude something about ourselves, rejecting one thing over another, subtly or not so subtly, whereas imagination includes everything. Imagination, as I said, includes fantasies. It recognizes the need we have for them when we feel helpless and powerless. They're part of a developmental process. Imagination recognizes that fantasies have a place, that when they take up all of the space, we remain cut off from the vulnerable, beautiful inside of us, and cut off from the rest of life. Imagination helps us to awaken to our fantasies with compassion, to begin to recover and heal and transform, to increase our individual integrity, like repairing the holes in a boat, to become more seaworthy instead of constantly being in danger of drowning. Through imagination and it enacted in our lives, we have possibilities and opportunities to discover more of the uniqueness of our individual selves and to discover the greater whole. Trusting in our ability to sail the ship, to notice the birds, the winds, the flow of the water all around us, to notice storms and too fast winds and find shelter. And increasingly find ourselves at home and in relationship to ourselves and all of life. Imagination heals us. We can imagine being more and more of our unique self, including all of who we are, our vulnerability, our strength, and they're not in opposition to each other. Our tenderness, our wisdom, and our not knowing. Imagination heals because it invites all of life to live. Imagination can also help us perceive or notice our fantasies and begin to come out of the trance of the fantasy. So I have something I'd like to lead you through and then discuss, but before I go on, since I made this movement to imagination and I brought forward this picture, I wanted to see if anyone wanted to say anything about that or was there a question or sharing before I lead you into the exercise.
Brenda, it's Johnny.
Yeah, it's Johnny.
I wonder if you could just touch briefly, or if it's not appropriate at this time, we'll skip it. But I see a lot of people, of course, with chronic conditions, chronic pain or chronic disease, and the difficulty they have is how to imagine themselves in a life where they are functional and living without going into the fantasy of they're going to find the cure of their disease, if it's an incurable disease. And I wonder if you could just address that with people that have such external circumstances pressing on them that it's almost choking off the ability to hold the current condition. And sure. So the tendency is to escape into the fantasy. How would you work with someone like that and encourage the imagination without discouraging the fantasy and yet at the same time integrating it? I wonder if you could talk a little on that.
Sure. I mean, that's obviously a very, very big topic, but I'll touch into it. And actually where I was going actually has to do with holding difficulty, so the exercise may actually help you, that what I'm talking about. But the thing about it is, one of the things that imagination, since imagination embraces the whole world, embraces everything, when, first of all, the person may need some, you know, just some pain relief, because pain can be, you know, so they may need some, you know, and I know you do, various things that just help relieve some of the pain. And then in the other moments when they're not completely, you know, lost in the haze of pain, they can work with it in this way, which is to recognize that, imagine that inside of the pain, there is an aspect of them that's screaming. There's an aspect of them that has been cut off, exiled. They don't even know what the voice is. They don't know what part of themselves that it's been, you know, but it's screaming. It's saying, pay attention to me. So imagination would allow me to begin to listen, really listen to the pain. And people will often make meaning, like I'm listening to the pain and it's telling me I need to do X, Y, Z, X, Y, Z. Those are just further fantasies from my perspective. Imagination, I don't mean to take it into that as much as allow imagination really to speak, to realize that. So at first you may go, you know, I can't hear. I don't know how I would hear what's actually in there. I'm hearing nothing. I'm into this pain. So let that come up. Whatever comes up, let that arise. And they might need to do this in relationship. I would say it always has to be in relationship to another, because usually when you've been caught in that individual place, you're trying to fix it by yourself, because part of the fantasy is, it's all up to me. I've got to fix this. I'm, you know, lost in that. So you need a connection with a compassionate other, whether that is a healer or someone else, but a compassionate other that can help you begin to listen. So feel the pain, and what do you think the pain, if you listen, if you just listen, the pain might simply just say, listen to me. I'm hurting. I'm hurting. It might be as simple as that. And if you really listen to that, then I would encourage through imagination for the person to hear that there's a one in them that hurts. Do you have place inside of you for the one in you that hurts, for the one in you just doesn't know what to do, that just feels hurt, lost, confused? Give that one space. So it can begin to unpack and unfold, but what you're doing, you know, what the guide to the person is helping them imagine is that there is, that they have to come into relationship with, and that there's intelligence, there's something that wants to be heard, to be seen, to be received, to be taken in, just like we were as children, something in us that wants to be heard and seen and taken in and valued, and you listen. You don't try to fix it. You don't try to rush to some kind of thing, but you're listening to what's there, and you're coming into relationship. And then as you do that, things will begin to unpack. It actually begins to move that. It may not be that the pain immediately disappears, because, again, people have to work with the fantasy part of themselves that wants it to happen yesterday, that wants the change to happen in some kind of particular kind of way, the holding on to the construct, all those kinds of things. But it's the power of imagination, which is the power to listen, to receive, to take in, to imagine wisdom and intelligence and life that's here and move with it. Does that help some, Johnny? Johnny? Johnny, I think you're on mute.
Yes, Brenda. Sorry, I muted myself while I was listening. It does, and I can extrapolate that into the places within me that are frozen.
Right, exactly.
That I can begin the dialogue with those places and say,
Exactly.
Why are you freezing time?
Exactly. What you have to do in terms of imagination is ride the part of you that wants to lock things into a fantasy, which is where you want it to get better right away, or you want it to be fixed, or you want it to do something. And you have to include that one that wants that, not leave that one out, include the fantasy, but continue to go on, to move on into more and more relationship, and the imagination, the power to listen and to receive. Again, it's the same way, you know, a little kid that's hurting wants to be heard, wants to be seen, wants to be noticed, wants to be cared for. That's what we have to learn to do with all of who we are.
Yeah, I get it. And in a sense, that's what we did on our last healing.
Yes.
Okay, I get it. Thank you.
So I do just want to say that for the most part, it's important to know, because part of, we have the two jobs of our individual self and being in relationship to the greater whole. Relationship is an important piece in this. And so to come out of, when we know that we can't do this for ourselves, part of the relationship is to really know our limitations. And again, it's not to split ourselves into one who's wiser than where I am right now. We need to be able to be limited and not know how to do something right now. And if we recognize really that we need a friend, we need someone who cares for us, we need a compassionate other to help us come into relationship with many of these places that we have cut off. We can also imagine and create stories and write things and have dialogues. I do those all the time. But you have to know that you're in that place where you can do that, where you can hold the one in you who's contracted right along with the one in you who's willing to imagine and engage in dialogue and create something new. But sometimes we're not able to do that. And so we have to pick our moments. We have to know when we can do that, and we can do it in these ways that are actually very healing for us, or when we really need to do it in contact and in relationship with another. You can also invite in reality to hold you, invite in other beings to help you move into it and go forward with it. So, I would like you to imagine something that is challenging for you right now. Maybe not the biggest challenge of your life, but something that's challenging, that's genuinely challenging for you right now. something you would like to change or make different in some way? Start by being aware of the situation as it is right now. If it involves other people, see the other person or people. If it's about yourself, just involve, you know, allow yourself to see the situation. See yourself, see the struggle. See it like a vignette, a story playing in front of you. Let it get vivid, the story. Now, for the moment, drop that story from in front of you. Now, allow yourself to imagine how you want this to be different. Allow yourself to imagine freely what it would look like. How would it feel? How would it be different? How would you be different? How would the situation be different? And so on. Make it vivid. Now see if you can notice any hints of fantasy in this new story. Notice them without judging them or making them bad or wrong. Is there some way that this new story protects you from something you don't think you can bear, something you don't want to feel? Does it require you to be smarter, kinder, wiser, more something than you are right now? Does it have someone else in the story be kinder, smarter, wiser? Just see if you can notice any little hints of fantasy. You don't need to fix it. Just notice any subtle ways you might be putting a pressure on. Yourself, that you're excluding something, leaving something out. Now, let's say you've left out some part of you. Maybe the one who's afraid or the one who feels vulnerable. Try to bring that one back in and imagine the story now playing out in which the challenge or difficulty begins to change, but it includes more of you, the vulnerable, the tender, the uncertain. Notice how it feels in your body. When you're imagining change and you're including more of yourself, embracing more of who you are, that you can have change and difference, and it includes all of you. You to come back. You can spend more time there. You can do other things with that. I'm not sure because some people envision at a different pace. So just come back slowly into the room. Would anyone like to share what that was like for you? If you're able to do it, I may have moved too fast for you, or if there's someone who it didn't move too fast for and you were able to notice it.
This is Sudha, Brenda.
Yes, Sudha.
I feel when I'm including that burning rage, the body sensations in the back and the anxiety in the stomach, when I'm held in this container, more softening.
Right.
It's like more of myself available to me.
Right.
It's more openness, not overriding that, just including that, being held with the group, like letting this whole thing coming into me, being in
beautifully
relationship.
Said, Sudha. That's exactly it.
It feels very tender, Brenda.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Exactly,
and when I'm saying that I feel the joy and pleasure and filling of my legs, there is a sensuality, there is a sensuousness. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brenda, this is Inez.
Yes.
This was really very powerful, and I found myself almost like I am too, wanting to touch I can't find words. And that was one thing, very powerful. And then another thing is I had this vivid imagination of being water and flowing and mm-hmm. being very calm, but then going against rocks and just flowing. That was really, this took me to a very different place.
Mm. Great. Great. Thank you, Dinesh. Beautiful.
Brenda, this is Irma. It was a much fuller experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was actually smiling to myself when I brought in the fear, actually, is what it was that I had mm-hmm. tried to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became much fuller and easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Scary, which was okay.
Yeah,
but it was
a scary you could be with, right.
Right, right. It was much more real.
Exactly, exactly. It was much,
much more real. Yeah.
Absolutely.
To do it perfectly. Oh, that's interesting.
Well, okay, so there's that little pressure for yourself. Okay, so it's a good fantasy piece for you to see, the part of you that wants to do it perfect. It isn't about doing it perfect. This is actually, it's a very healing practice to do this. It begins, as I said, with feeling something that you have a challenge in. Then mm-hmm. you imagine it being different, and then you just allow yourself to notice that there's a subtle, or maybe not so subtle, pressure or fantasy coming in which you are bigger, wiser, smarter, without fear, without, you know, whatever. You notice that. That's all you do. Then bring that back in. Bring in the fear or the whatever it is, the anger, the confusion, and let it live right in the story of where you want things to change. And it does become more real. You feel more alive in your body,
mm-hmm.
more able to actually make change that supports you, more present with who you actually are, not the perfect version. And then when the perfect shows up, you can laugh and say, okay, that's one more piece I need to include, the imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yay!
Yay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God. Thank you, honey.
You're welcome. Anyone else want to share? Anyone have difficulty with this they'd like to share? It's not just about the successes. I'd like to hear the struggles, because sometimes it's hard to let go of the fantasy pieces, and it feels like they're still saving your life, and you need to hold on to them. And that's okay, too. Just noticing that already begins to let them soften a little bit. So maybe you weren't able to make that other transition. That's okay if that was true. So anyone else like to share?
Yes, this is Yvette.
Yeah.
I had difficulties with this. Actually, as you were talking and I was trying to do this, I found myself getting very anxious. My heart started beating very fast, and I've had problems with high blood pressure, so I got really scared. And I couldn't do it. I really couldn't do it. It was a little, maybe it was going too fast for me.
Right. You might have needed it to go much slower. Yeah. Right. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I felt like I probably would do it, but I would need to take piecemeal,
mm-hmm.
slowly, step by step. So that I can go to that place, because I felt literally freezing. It has to do also with the need to take care of myself all by myself, and not involve anyone else, because I've been so let down so many times that I get scared, especially in terms of my physical health.
Mm-hmm.
Also my emotional health. So I tend to kind of hunker down and freeze and try to do it on my own,
mm-hmm.
Which is not possible, really, and I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Finding it very difficult to find someone to really help me. And I'm talking more, not so much of a healer, I'm talking more about like a physician, someone who can help me medically. And I am really in a very difficult space in terms of that. So I was thinking about what you've been teaching us in terms of the the study guide, based on the Kabbalistic healing. You have a meditation called Coming Out of Memory. And I wonder if I've done that, and I try to do it, quite a bit, or inviting everything in, trying to find meditations that would really lead me more comfortably in a place where I can start this process you're talking about.
Well, I think coming out of memory is an excellent meditation for this, as well as inviting everything in. So I think I would encourage you to keep working with both of those. I would say to you that this meditation this exercise I just took you guys through, the definition of success is not that you were able to bring back in a piece of you that you had left away and then you were able to go on and envision it. That happens for some people, and that's great because I get very excited, and it's a wonderful thing because you're returning. But you have to know that just being awake to the fact that it was too much for you, that it brought up these terrors, that was enough, because being in touch with who you actually are and not pretending that you're not terrified and not pretending that you are, wiser or in a different place than you are is the healing. So it does what it needs to do from that place, and then you can work with other practices, as you said, coming out of memory and inviting everything in. You can work with other practices that will support you in being with these places that are so terrified and that you have real issues you have to work with. But the real, as I said, the definition of success, if you will, within this is not about getting this practice right, following it all the way through with the steps. It's about letting yourself notice what's actually there, the one in you who's terrified in this case. And I think that's exactly what it needed to do.
Okay. Thanks.
So thank you.
Brenda, this is Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
Hi. I saw such a clear connection between this childhood, this fantasy that I used to use to, well, when you mentioned earlier, one of the childhood fantasies is about being alone, playing alone in your room. I used to do that a lot. I mean, my mother she's still living, she's 97, and she still brags about what a wonderful child I was. Even when I was sick, I never needed her. I could play in my room all day. And I remember feeling alone and lonely and wanting her to come in, but she couldn't, whatever it was, she couldn't handle me. But the protection was, I don't need anybody.
Right.
I can do it all myself. And
right.
Now I saw in this fantasy, it became so clear the connection between, I've created a lot of chaos around myself. So, and I have a lot of things that I have to take care of. And it keeps me separate from people. I have some close friends. I make connections, but then I pull back. And in this meditation, I saw how clearly what I would want it to be. I imagined myself clear of all this chaos, which I've been starting to work on, but I imagined myself clear of all this chaos and saw more people coming into my life. And it was a little scary, but it was also very exciting and very vivid. But the main thing was I so clearly saw that connection between that childhood fantasy and how I've been living it out.
There you go. That's it. That's it. To see that, I mean, so you see all these different ways each one of you have been experienced it. That's beautiful. That's so beautiful for you, sweetie, to see you to see that.
Yeah.
How clearly it's still playing out in your life. And I love it. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Brenda, this is Maris.
Yes, Maris.
I want to share that when I first imagined the new situation I wanted, that and I brought in those things I left out and saw the fantasies in it, it became, I saw that the first picture was didn't have life in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fixed picture.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't, it was idealistic, there wasn't moving anything. And when
right.
I brought in all those things, it became messy and not simple anymore, and challenging, and
And real.
Real, yes. It was as if I left life out in the first place, and then life came in.
That's exactly what happens. Our fantasies do leave life out. They leave out things we need, like our fears or our messiness or, you know, whatever the imperfections are. You know, it leaves those out, which means it's a static picture of life.
Yeah.
Real life includes all of those. Doesn't mean we can't make change. Doesn't mean we can't change things in directions we want to do. We can imagine and do that. But it has more life in it then.
Yeah. I could clearly feel it.
Beautiful, Mattis. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. So, again, whatever happens to each one of you in this exercise, it's really important for you to know that, yes, you might have wanted the experience of it all becoming more life and it all becoming freer or floating. You might have wanted a different experience than what you had. But what's also important for you to know is that whatever you woke up to within the fantasy, within the contraction, within whatever was going on, it did what it needed to do. It did what you were ready for today. We're beings. We're processes. One of the struggles with us that fantasy does is that fantasy creates frozen snapshots, pictures of who we are, and only wants those. But real life means today when I'm capable of, you know, today I might be able to, you know, walk 3 miles. Tomorrow, you know, I just walk out my door. That's as far as you go. So as a living process, some days we can just notice, and that's enough that we can do, just notice that I'm afraid. And other days we can take further steps and begin to come more and more into life and free ourselves from that fantasy. But it doesn't matter. What matters is beginning to be awake to them and beginning to be awake to how we reduce our lives and to begin to embrace more. Imagine a life in which more and more of us is embraced and held and cared for and cherished, and so that we can begin to see that everything, absolutely everything in our life is calling us to return to ourselves, the whole of who we are, the individual, unique, beautiful you, and in relationship with all that is. It's the two jobs we have, and they're a unity, and life is calling us to life. So, thank you guys. All I can say is thank you so much for being today, for being with me, for thank you all for being here today, for participating with such hearts, and I hope this was healing for you. you will get a copy of the recording. I will also send out copies of the two meditations I led you through today, the first one and the one I did at the end.
Oh, great.
That's
I'll send
great.
Those out
thank
with a letter.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Thank you, darlings.
Great
to be with you.
Thank you, honey. Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
everyone.
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brenda.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
Okay, darlings.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.